interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Antoine Sage, founder of PE Cube, previous founder and managing partner of FNB Private Equity, and also a lecturer in private equity. Hopefully, I've got all of that. I know there's actually more than that, Antoine, but we'll keep it short for this. So welcome, and thank you very much for sharing your insights. I'm very excited to hear from you today.
Thanks, Alex, for welcoming us. It's a great pleasure to be here. Supposedly, we should provide you with a quick intro of who we are and what's my background there.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
And, well, I've been in the private equity for the past 20 years for various investment funds. I was lucky enough, and it was by pure luck, to join private equity through Astorg Partners in Paris. And that was in 2001. And since then, I've co-created a fund called Syria Capital that was related to the food and beverage industry. And up to the stage where it was clear that I was somehow really entrepreneur and that we could bring extra value on this market by being a little bit more independent. And this is what we did with the creation and of totally an autonomous investment funds with no sponsor initially, which is FNB Private Equity, successfully launched in 2017. And we've reached a level of 135 million euros, which is for an emerging manager. That was definitely okay by French standards. And on March 17th, 2020, we've launched PE Cube. And PE Cube is a SaaS provider for the private equity industry. We believe that there's a requirement for tool that SaaS tool as a fintech just to properly support the management of private equity funds. And this is what we did for the past 18 months. And that result of that is that we've shipped version one of this product earlier in July. And we're really proud of the quality of product we have today. And the feedback we have from our early prospect and first clients are really great. So we're happy, we're proud, and we hope that will bring some support to the industry. Regarding what you mentioned before, I'm also a lecturer, and it's been 50 years that I'm a lecturer at both the INSEAD, it used to be the case at ESSEC, but also MIT Enterprise Forum. And I graduated from ESSEC, NYU, and INSEAD.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I know there's a lot included, especially in your background, and it's rare that we get somebody that's worth both on the private equity side, or at least the private equity side initially, and then moved into actually running their own business and founding that. So I'm very keen to hear kind of your perspectives on things. So to jump in, usual first question, what one mistake do you see either private equity firms or their portfolio companies making, and what actions would you take to correct that?
Well, based on my experience there, there's something that, and actually it took me years to understand that, is the lack or the insufficient relationship that we build with LPs. And usually a relationship with LPs is something that's quite intense during the fundraising period. And afterwards, we're just there to get somehow a cold fish reporting. And we believe that, in the past, we believed that was sufficient. And it's a large mistake that we say that I see today. And really, there's a requirement to build a partnership, real partnership with those LPs. And this is not a marketing or buzzword. It's really tackling too many issues there. The first one being providing clear benchmark of what we do as a private equity fund. And so getting the right tools, the right data, and to be clear-sighted regarding what's happening in the over private equity firms on the markets. And the second thing, which is a consequence of that, is the ability to get the good level of LP communication. And 20 years ago, financial data was sufficient, were definitely sufficient. Today, what we can see more and more is that there's a requirement to communicate both in terms of financial and non-financial data. And that includes sustainable development, ESG. And this is something that requires a real industrial organization internally, and not only to be able to properly report and process that, but also to be rock solid in terms of what you pretend, how you present that and the way you're coherent within time. And that requires to be really, really solid within your organization. I think it's something that evolved, and most of the LPs today are using the term transparency. And really, there's a requirement to be able for those LPs to get access to exactly what's going on within your portfolio. And when you combine this factor with the fact that we're having retail access to private equity, new kinds of LPs, more numerous and so on, there's no way that you're going to multiply your investor relationship teams. You need to be solid and quite somehow automated. And then comes the human factor on top of something that is really reliable. And this is what we work on at PEQ.
That's interesting. We're seeing a lot more of the investor relations role becoming more prominent in various different companies. Do you think there's obviously a tide turning to being more focused on actually updating LPs? Why do you think that there's historically been a lot of attention on LPs during fundraising stages, and then post that, there's maybe not as been as much updating and relationship building? Why do you think historically private equity has been like that?
Well, technically two factors. The first one is that if you remember the time, we used to be called alternative assets, meaning that for institutional investors, that was something that was alternative, that was really tiny within its whole allocation. So the level that was required there in terms of rules of the game was definitely a little less demanding. So there's been a maturity within LPs in relation with private equities on one side. And on the other side, there's been also some movements within the whole financial industry where the private equity showed some resilience and high resilience. And as private equity investors, we also had a tendency to try to explain what we were doing in terms of benefits. And really, we have good things to share, good things to communicate on. And it requires solid data, but it requires also, to get something else than just an industry where everyone pretends to be top quartile. It's not something that is satisfactory. We have diversity in this environment. We do goods, and this is business for goods in most of transactions. And we need to support that and to mention, especially for retails, that private equity is a good and safe environment to invest in.
Absolutely, completely agree. It's an ever-growing investment vehicle now. And as we see retail investors coming in, it'll only improve and increase. So I'm curious, I don't speak to many people that go private equity investor, certainly founding their own firm and then moving into actually running a company. So what was it that inspired you to go from investing in what seemed food and beverage companies to then founding your own SaaS company?
Well, there's a trick there. It's, as I mentioned before, I've met the path of private equity out of pure luck. I was, my initial background was through medical studies. I've worked in the IT industry years ago through IBM. And I've just happened to have Astorg as a client. And I switched from this IT consultancy to private equity, meaning that I can speak two languages there, digital and private equity. And obviously there's a benefit at the crossing of those two. And on top, and that wouldn't be possible without knowing within the deepest part of my heart that I love to create, I love to initiate things, to construct and to launch things. And this is exactly what we do as a fintech. And happily enough, we've been selected among the 11 fintech to invest in France this year. And that shows also that there's clear interest of investors within the fintech environments dedicated to the private equity industry. And as a matter of fact, and you imagine that the AMF, the Autorité des Marchés Financiers, is now asking every single GP on the market that is regulated, which tool do you use? And the big thing there is that only 6% of the market is equipped with a solution to manage its fund. Really? This is so. When you add all that up, it was clear that there was something to be done, and we're really happy to tackle that.
Interesting. Well, it sounds like you've seen an opportunity based on the work you've done and pivoted to go and do it.
We were just lacking a product. And so if the product is not there, we're just creating the product that I would love to have 10 years ago and that I would love to have 1 year ago. And it's great.
Absolutely.
Sorry to interrupt you, Alex.
No, it's okay. You're clearly kind of solving your own problem there and focused on that. So having worked on both sides of the table, what advice would you give to private equity investors to better engage with their portfolio companies and forge better relationships and obviously better outcomes?
Two things there would pop in my mind. The first one is to be really clear on your expectations and the way you organize internally, because it's... And in my experience, it was, you have the front office team that usually got the transaction completed through the deal flow and so on. And they're in charge of this portfolio monitoring and so on. But in reality, you have a whole team within the PE firm that works on trying to understand, manage, benchmark what's and value what's going on within this portfolio company. And so, being clear on expectations and which are the key players that will consider the performance of the company, the way, for instance, ESG will be managed within the portfolio monitoring process and phase. It's something that is really absolutely essential. And so first thing will be expectations, key players there, and to really offer perspective, not only to top management of the company, but also to be clear that most of the private equity are just recycling common money coming from day-to-day business and regular economy. And this is something that we're not saying enough. I mean, this money is coming from insurance companies, from pension funds, from banks, from individuals, from wealth management and so on. Meaning it's not something abstract. It's only practical. And I think we would all gain just by mentioning who we work for and what's our aim, what's our goal.
I agree with that completely. So another thing which we're seeing at the moment is obviously as new investors come into the market and private equity becomes more and more popular, we're seeing a huge amount of new private equity firms, especially post-COVID. We've seen a lot of firms starting up. And so what advice, having founded two firms in private equity in your own portfolio company, what advice would you give to a new founder to make it successful as their new private equity firm?
First thing, just to be clear on the fact that we're working for clients. So meaning that it's not everything just to get a commitment within your fund, get a subscription. It's one thing, but it's not sufficient. And you should bear in mind that you work under regulation and that there's no secret that this regulation will become harder and harder to tackle with. So you'll need to be rock solid on the regulation part. And everything that you do today will be audited maybe in 10 years of time. So you need to be professional from day one. And the level of this game today is increasing, really. So you just need to be ready for that. It's a great opportunity. You need to have a great team. Recruitment is absolutely essential. In relation with my past experience, pre-emerging managers, one of the biggest issue is the partnership itself. So and problems may happen. This is business life. But you need to have that clearly in mind with your LPs. This is not you're working for those clients, and if anything happens, you need to have a very clear communication and a critical path to make the right decision in their best benefits, because by the end of the day, we're working for them, not for us.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a good point to make. I think there is you mentioned obviously the focus around the LPs at the fundraising stage, then being kind of left behind, and then obviously focusing on that as a new founder. When you started up your private equity firms, and even your company now with PE Cube, what were the big worries for you? What was what kept you up at night? What was the concerns, and were they genuine concerns looking back now, or is it more, I probably worried a bit too much?
Well, actually, If you're an anxious kind of person, and that anxiety is something that makes you suffer, don't go there, because it's going to be your daily life. So the real thing is that, and you know that as an entrepreneur yourself, if it doesn't energize you, it's a good sign. If you're being overcautious for something, it's normal. That means you're not suicidal. I mean, you're trying to protect yourself, which is good. It's really, there are periods where thinking is not enough, and you should stop thinking. You should just act and produce what you need to produce, and to be flexible enough just to consider that what you foresaw 6 months ago may not be the right thing today, as of today. So really be a little bit humble, flexible, and one last thing, but you know that also. Getting to the closest person you have around you, because being an entrepreneur can be really painful for those who are around you, and you need to get their full support and to find a proper balance there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It can be very lonely in business when you're running and owning it, and there's not a lot of people you can turn to have a conversation about it. So having a good, strong network is definitely absolutely key. So, Antoine, having spent 15 years as a lecturer on the topic of private equity, there's not going to be many that know the ins and outs of everything in so much detail. No doubt you've shared a lot of value and a great deal of knowledge during that time. But is there anything in particular during your lecturing that you've kind of learned or you've kind of understood along your kind of journey that's helped you both with your private equity investment work and also now your entrepreneurial journey?
Three things would pop in my mind there. The first one is that you don't go, I mean, I don't have any PhD. I'm not a professor of anything. I'm just a lecturer in really high quality business school, meaning that I have great students and I'm really honored to be there with them. And if I go there, it's just giving back. Initially, it was just giving back. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was taking a lot also, because when you have a crowd, a few hundred students, or just 50 or 60 students, obviously they're coming to you. They're really tough and really smart in terms of questions attacking. And there's a benefit and there's a large benefit in the kind of questions they may raise that would be an eye-opener to you as a private equity professional. It's we have a tendency to get myopia in terms of looking and considering what we work on, and their position is, and though their questions are definitely something that can be quite puzzling, but as a matter of fact, it makes you stronger, and it you get back to the office and you revise the way you manage this portfolio company, because obviously there's something that has been done wrong. And so it's been quite successful to this extent, puzzling from time to time. That's also another thing, which is networking, not in a mean way. It's just you opening your door, and this is not during your 2 or 3 hour sessions that you're going to have the students with you. They're just literally opening your networks towards new opportunities, but also new solicitations. And when you face phases where you need some inputs of some feedbacks, they are there. And that's really strong. And helping them to be connected with the right person, but it will also help you to broaden your network. And that worked. And after 15 years, I must confess, this is dramatically efficient. And so the few benefits, that's for sure. Courses are evolving. The kind of questions we're tackling is something that does evolve also. And there's one thing that has been really rich in terms of getting to know our environment and you received Olivier Gottschall a few episodes ago, and which is the PhDs which are reflecting on private equity. And there, this is really mind-blowing, because they're considering an industry. I mean, as a typical practitioner, you would do what? one or two deals per year in the LBO environment, meaning that you don't see anything regarding the reality of the market. You just have a snipping, tiny view on the market. And when you work with those PhDs, well, you discover things that are just not imaginable initially. And it's something, I think that the connection between academics, people who take time to work on facts, and it's the same with LPs. With GPs, there's really a good connection to be put in motion there. And this is exactly what I like to do. And frankly, I look forward to the next session that will be in Singapore for INSEAD, and I really look forward to it.
Excellent, getting that balance between academic and putting it in practice. Absolutely, and I agree. You know, the network that you build is absolutely key. And if there's one thing I wish I'd done before I'd set up my own business in private equity, is maybe you've built a little bit of a network rather than going fresh into something. But it's all been a good journey all the same. So for an individual that's obviously very passionate about the industry, both in the work that you've done, but also the education and the giving back with the lecturing now, what do you love about private equity? And equally, what do you dislike?
No, this is, well, as you mentioned, I'm totally biased because I'm passionate by this industry. And I think it's, if someone loves to get variety in terms of mindsets, kind of problems we may face and so on, it's highly stimulating. And the quality of people there is something I've never seen before. And it's absolutely fantastic. And you have a level of exposure when you're young that can be really high, which has been my case at Astor Partners. Very fortunate that I've been there. Still, some things that are that can be a little bit limiting, you can be blindsided because you don't see the whole market. And as long as you haven't seen the perspective and grab the perspective on an LP, you don't precisely understand what is really the business you're in. So, and especially for younger practitioners, there's a question of consider that you have clients and you need to fundraise with those clients, and contributing to that is key because it's a central part of one of the two central part of business. And another thing is related to regulation. I've seen in the past some private equity practitioners who just consider that it was just painful regulation. In my view, this is the best security we may have in terms of the best insurance we may have in terms of keeping on being in business. And being in business requires a solid regulation, and a solid regulation with which we may have good discussion and at a high level. And I think this is something that from a French perspective that we managed to do. It was not always that easy. And it requires constant effort in terms of involvement within public space. And I've seen periods where it's been really hard. Today, it seems to be definitely better. And I hope we'll keep being on this track.
That's interesting. I think regulation's, you know, important in any industry, and a key facet. I do find even conversations like this with yourself, Antoine, we've had some private equity people, you know, investors approach us that work for, you know, some of the big names in private equity, but unfortunately they're not allowed to feature because they need to script me between what I ask. And we haven't had anybody that we've brought on that's told me what all the questions are going to be. So I think we're focused on bringing value, but I think there can be a little bit of overinterpretation of said regulation. And but we need all that foundation around us to be able to do it. But I do think there's some firms do take it a little bit. I suppose there's branding and everything else that needs to come out and what's going to be said. And I know obviously we can't fully advertise private equity in its full entirety and put an advert and a billboard on to raise funds. But I do think there's a little bit of maybe over-stringent interpretation in areas where there shouldn't be. And I'm sure you would be able to tell better than certainly than me that there's maybe not as much attention on the regulations as there should be in some areas as well.
And that's the reason why also the within the settings of PE firms, I mean, the importance of back and middle office is something that that should be considered, because this is real leverage in terms of keeping on being in business and growing up. Because, I mean, you mentioned before the retail side, those new LPs joining the private equity field. In order to properly welcome them, we need to be strong, and those PE firms will need to be really strong in terms of middle and back office. And those that will be strong enough will definitely take advantage of this new opportunity. So regulation is definitely of importance, and we need to, and that requires an active dialogue. If you don't have that, you're stuck.
Absolutely. So Antoine, obviously you spend a lot of time doing lecturing, but where do you get your influences from? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to keep abreast with everything that's going on in your busy life, I'm sure?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to join Professor Damodaran in NYU, and is top notch. I mean, really the greater inspirer you can imagine in terms of valuation. And frankly speaking, I'm sure that I haven't fully understood what he shared with me when I was in New York. That was in 2008, 2009. And another great thinker that I'm still in connection with and that shows great support to PEcube today is Elie Talamore from LBS, which is the author of International Private Equity. And I do have active collaboration with Claudia Sixberger, also from INSEAD. So those are rather more on the academic side. Obviously, we have the typical The Economist. I mean, the weekly dose of The Economist is something that is absolutely required and enlightening to me. And in terms of private equity, I would Real Deals and Quotes. If I would consider a little bit more local things, Capital Finance and CF News are definitely of importance. Podcasts is something I'm seriously considering today. To be frank, it's a little bit more on the fintech and venture side. We have things called like the generation do it yourself or things like that, which are definitely great. Exactly the kind of things you're doing in really getting in the intimacy of those entrepreneurs, and that shows support, because as you mentioned before, it happens that you can feel quite alone, and it's definitely efficient. And this is pretty it, because I didn't find anything in terms of TV shows or something equivalent that would be at the right level regarding private. And I think it's something we should have, but nothing is there in my view. If you have any different opinion, I would be really happy to get.
No, I've not seen anything future on that basis either. So there's not much with regards to that within our industry. So I completely agree. So Antoine, if anybody wants to reach out either to discuss PEcube or just to kind of reach out and learn more about your story, learn a bit more about some of the pains and the good times, if anybody's going through the same as we all know what that's like, how best does anybody reach out to you, please?
Well, the best way is just to contact us directly. This is pe3.io. Simple, short. We're a team of 17 located all across Europe, from Croatia to UK. And we are up and running with version 1, which is great. So please come join. We'll be happy to share with you a demo and to get you onboarded in less than 3 weeks. And because you have good business to do, so do your business and we'll be there to support. This is all that we do.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Antoine. I really appreciate your insight, and you've left loads of value both for portfolio executives listening, but also, of course, private equity professionals with your split experience, which is quite rare, to say the least. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Alex. Have a nice day. Thank you.
Excellent. And as always, thank you very much for joining us, for all the listeners. And of course, should you ever need support with either private equity professionals or portfolio executive hiring, please do reach out to me at Raw Selection. But until then, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.